Proceed to case number four, 02-13-47, Danden versus Ashcroft. Just hold on, Mr. Berg, for a moment. Only 50% of the people are interested in your argument, apparently.
Maybe they'll listen later on the web, Your Honor.
Okay, Mr. Berg.
Good morning, Your Honor. May I please the court. Counsel, my name is Roy Alice Berg, and I represent the petitioners in this matter, Mr. Nabil Danden, his wife, and their three oldest children. Your Honor, in the late 1980s, Mr. Danden was a civilian employee, an accountant with the Lebanese Christian Forces in Lebanon, a job that he had held since 1985. In June 1989, he was taken by the Syrian forces operating in Lebanon, and he was beaten, held for 3 days without food, and interrogated about the names of those who were supporting the Lebanese Christian forces. After 3 days, his wife was able to secure his release, apparently through the payment of a ransom or a bribe. Shortly thereafter, the family home was destroyed. For the next 2 months, the family lived in shelters and finally left by night to Cyprus by boat and then came to the United States in August 1989. Here in September 1989, they applied for political asylum with the Immigration and Naturalization Service. Some 7 years later, in December 1996, the Immigration and Naturalization Service, the INS, told the Dandans and gave them notice that their asylum case was being referred to an immigration judge. They were issued the charging documents called Orders to Show Cause, the charging documents under the procedures in effect at that time called deportation procedures. The charging documents instructed them to appear in immigration court here in Chicago on April 3rd, 1997. Prior to April 1st, 1997, which is a very important date in immigration jurisprudence, their prior attorney filed an application for suspension of deportation, a form of relief for those in deportation proceedings, which if granted, would have bestowed on them lawful permanent resident status in this country. When they went to court on April 3rd, 1997, Immigration Judge Cuevas terminated deportation proceedings, determining that the orders to show cause, the charging documents, had not been filed with the INS prior to April 1st by the Immigration Court. In fact, never were filed with the Immigration Court. Later that year, in 1997, the INS issued notices to appear the new charging document under the new statutory scheme, placing them in, under the new terminology, removal proceedings. They were directed to appear, which they did, before Immigration Judge Brajos, requested the forms of relief under political asylum, withholding of removal, and protection under the United Nations Convention Against Torture. In closing argument before Judge Brajos, Ms. Christine Young, the attorney for the INS, conceded that she believed that Mr. Danden did have a subjective fear of persecution. In his decision, Judge Brajos agreed and concluded that Mr. Danden had testified credibly and that he did possess a subjective fear of persecution. But Judge Brajos concluded that Mr. Danden had not been persecuted, what he suffered had not been persecution, and that his family did not have a well-founded fear of persecution. In January 2002, the Board of Immigration Appeals dismissed the appeal in a 2-1 decision. Board Member Espinoza filed a dissent in which she stated that Mr. Danden had been persecuted, and that raised a rebuttable presumption that the family had a well-founded fear of future persecution.
Well, assuming that were the case, assuming that we should find that he had in fact been persecuted, and that shifted the burden to the government on the issue of future persecution, is that significant in this case, or isn't there enough evidence in the record to rebut the presumption in any event?
Judge Kennedy, I don't believe there is enough evidence.
Well, we have this just State Department report that things are all different in Lebanon than they used to be, or something to that effect.
Well,
doesn't that rebut that presumption, or doesn't it?
I don't believe it sufficiently rebuts, and I believe we also have evidence in the record that it is still dangerous for this family to return. We then filed, after the board dismissed the appeal, we filed a motion to reconsider, asking the board to simply adopt board member Espinoza's dissenting opinion that he had suffered past persecution and she stated in her opinion that that raised a rebuttable presumption, and it had not been rebutted.
And that's because the ruling really didn't speak to the Syrian forces and the fact that he was captured by them and all the problems there. Is that the basis for that statement?
By Board Member Espinosa, Judge Williams? I believe that's correct. I think that she concluded that he had been persecuted, and that once that concluded, the board, in its 2-1 opinion, held that this beating and being held without food and being interrogated for 3 days was not persecution. We also filed a motion to reopen and included new evidence about current conditions or more recent conditions in Lebanon. The sum and substance of our argument, Your Honors, is that Mr. Dandan was persecuted and that he does have a well-founded fear of persecution. We also assert that this family's right to due process of law was violated in several instances. First, the INS took more than 7 years to adjudicate the asylum application. Second, they did not file the charging document, the order to show cause, with the court prior to April 1st.
That could be a due process violation. I mean, most, they want to stay here. It would be fine with them if the INS took 30 years to resolve this thing, wouldn't it?
Well, what happened is it precluded them from getting what's called suspension of deportation. And there is attached to our brief a memo from from Mr. Blackman of the INS headquarters at Tab E, in which the INS is directed, the asylum offices are directed to file these charging documents prior to April 1st of 1997. And specifically, like in this family's case, they lost the right to apply for something called suspension of deportation. Now, under the new statutory scheme, there's something called cancellation of removal. They were not eligible for that because they did not have 10 years in the country prior to the filing of the notice to appear. Your Honor, it is our position.
What about the children, Susie and Raji?
Yes.
I mean,
three.
Yes. I mean, in terms of the children, they now have. You know, what are the independent arguments for them for asylum? Well, now that's what you're faced with, given the time lag.
Right. Okay. And if they are denied, it would be our position that they also suffer due process deprivation. We hope, though, that because they were included at a time that they were under 21, that under the Child Adjustment Act, something that passed in the interim, that we can argue that they are still protected because at the time the application was filed, they were under 21. Your Honor, I would refer your attention to the January 23, 2002 decision of the Board of Immigration Appeals attached to Tab C of our brief and found at page 199 in the record, where the board states, although a respondent apparently had a well-founded fear of persecution at the time he left Lebanon in 1989, where the Syrian forces harmed him because of his religion and his political opinion or imputed political opinion. It's our position that the board then has conceded that Mr. Dandan was harmed and that when this family came, they had a well-founded fear of persecution.
Your Honor, what are you quoting from there? And
I'm sorry.
What are you quoting from?
Well, I apologize, Your Honor. That is the January 2002 decision of the Board of Immigration Appeals, the majority opinion. At our brief, it's at Tab C, the second page.
And this is the board opinion.
This is the board's opinion in this case.
Right.
In this case. And it's found on page 199 of the record of the third paragraph. And in which they've conceded that he was harmed, and that when they came, they had a well-founded fear of persecution. Now, this court has defined persecution as punishment or infliction of harm for political or other reasons that this country does not recognize as legitimate. It is said in the Thomas Mosaic case, it encompasses more than threats to life or freedom. Non-life-threatening violence and physical abuse also fall within this category. And in the Berkatowski case, this court said types of action which cross the line are detention, arrest, interrogation, prosecution, imprisonment, illegal searches, confiscation of property, surveillance, beatings, or torture. Mr. Dandan was repeatedly beaten over 3 days. He testified that his face was swollen from the beating. He was denied food during that period of time. The board
took place in 1989, though, did it not? What we're talking about?
Yes, it did, Your Honor.
And it's now 2003. How long does this presumption carry on in the face of some evidence that conditions have changed in Lebanon.
Well, Your Honor, I think if we look at the totality of this case, Judge Cudahy, we don't have someone that hid out for 15 years and then said, well, here I am, 15 years ago I was beaten. As soon as he came, he presented his application a month later. The government decided it did not adjudicate it until December 1996. So I would say that, and the board acknowledged he had a well-founded fear when he came. So why should he suffer and be sent back to this place simply because his actions or this case was not acted on for many years?
But isn't the issue whether the fear is well-founded today rather than sometime in the past?
I would submit, Your Honor, that under the facts of this case, that they had a well-founded fear and they should have been granted asylum. And if during the passage of time things have gotten so much better, then that should not be their fault. But I would submit that things are still dangerous in Lebanon. The Syrian forces are still there. Hezbollah is still there. We know from here in Chicago, a graduate of Moody Bible Institute, November 2002, was killed in Lebanon, just November 2002, just a few months ago. I would submit, Your Honor, that it is still dangerous. So we would ask, Your Honor, that this court grant asylum to this family, alternatively, to remand to the board with instructions that this man has been persecuted, and perhaps there could be a hearing on whether he still has a well-founded fear or they still have a well-founded fear. But I would ask that if it is remanded back to the court, that it be determined that they could proceed in deportation proceedings and could apply for suspension of deportation. Thank you very much, Your Honor.
Shannon?
Good morning. Patricia Buchanan for Respondent, Attorney General of the United States. There are a number of issues going on in this case. I would like to start with the claim regarding past persecution, which is separate and distinct from an analysis of a well-founded fear of future persecution. Petitioners rest their claim for asylum based on past persecution, which is predicated on a single incident of detention in 1989 in the context of the Civil War. Case law is clear that severity and magnitude of frequency is a touchstone for determining whether an applicant has...
Well, as I understand it, this fellow was abused, at least, by the Syrian forces, and then immediately decided to leave the country. So I guess they didn't have an opportunity to abuse him again, but... why isn't this persecution? Mm-hmm. Is it simply because it only lasted 3 days, or?
Yes, Your Honor. Yes, Your Honor.
Is there any case law to support that? The duration per se is controlling.
Well, most of the case law looks at a combination of factors. I'm aware of only one case that has a single 3-day detention, which was found not to be past persecution by this court, but that's an unreported case. So it wasn't cited in our brief, but the other cases that find past persecution have more significant harm over a longer period of time. Follow-up phone calls, harassment, arrest, multiple detentions. In this case, it's a single incident.
And he was detained and beaten and starved for. And cut off from food and drink for 3 days. Isn't that enough to amount to persecution?
It is not, Your Honor. 3 days is a very brief period of time for the benefit that he's seeking.
Yeah, but this is a situation where, I mean, so you would prefer that he stuck around and be beaten and tortured, you know, a few more times and then flee to the United States. I mean, can't we look at this, you know, in the factual context of this case?
Well, actually, it's also worth noting how he was released from detention. He was released from detention by
a bribe.
By a bribe, right.
Which is probably his only alternative.
Well, it also indicates that they weren't necessarily interested in him for prolonged purposes or for repeated subsequent arrests. And in this case, he had indicated that when he was interrogated, he stated that he was a low-level affiliate of the Lebanese Christian forces, and he had no information about the high-level leadership. In fact, if they were sincerely interested in him, they probably wouldn't have released him.
But on the other hand, they got the money and they could have picked him up later to get additional money. I mean, that is an alternative.
Well, but that's not persecution, that's extortion. And that's a separate...
But if a beating had been accompanied by that, it would be persecution. Or it could be.
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
If beating had accompanied, let's say he was picked up a second time, you know, and was beaten again, you know, pay the money again.
That would be a different fact pattern, but the payment of the money seems to reflect more an extortion motivation than one that's protected under one of the enumerated grounds in the Immigration Nationality Act.
Let me ask you about his 89 asylum application. Does the 10-year delay in adjudicating that application give rise to due process problems?
No, Your Honor. First of all, it really wasn't a 10-year delay. He was interviewed in 1996. That was 7 years. But in order to have a due process violation, there needs to be a constitutional protected liberty or property interest. And he received his process. He had his asylum claim adjudicated. He wasn't harmed by the delay in the asylum adjudication. The fact is, the Civil War ended in Lebanon in 1990. So even if his case had been considered in 1991, he wouldn't have been able to establish a well-founded fear of future persecution because the context for the harm he suffered had ended. And so he was not prejudiced by the delay. And as to subsequent delays that did occur in the process, I would note that petitioners apparently made no request to expedite the consideration of their application or make inquiries as to the status, things that could have helped move it along. When they did have a hearing before an immigration judge, it was their applications for continuances that went on for 2 years. They never brought to the court's attention any interest in expediting their case, and so there is no due process right to expedited consideration of asylum, and to the extent there were any delays, they were not prejudiced by it with regard to their asylum application.
You're acquainted with the Beggs-Zatowski case?
Excuse me, Your Honor?
You're acquainted with the Beggs-Zatowski case?
Yes.
Where Judge Ripple is similar situation. He found that there, that panel found there was past persecution and a shift in the burden, and which the BIA hadn't considered, and the case was sent back to be considered in that circumstance, which seems to me to be the real problem that I see with this case.
Your Honor, it's... The Beggs-Zatowski case is very factually distinguishable from this case. In that case,
he got harassed twice rather than once. That's true.
Well, he was, but in that case, he was forced to fight in an army without sufficient protection. He was put into the firing lines and used as a human shield. Those facts are not at all present in this case, and I think what was the touchstone in that case was that he was effectively put in harm's is significant.
Well, I mean, it's distinguishable as to whether the past acts amounted to persecution.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes.
I'm talking about the procedural ramifications of that.
Of a finding of past persecution. Well, in this case, the board, and I would actually like to address that issue because I do take issue with the characterization of the board's decision with regard to past persecution. The board did not find past persecution, and they found that, and I believe the reference to page 199 of the record of the board's decision is really being mischaracterized here. The board said that although respondent apparently had a well-founded fear of persecution at the time he left Lebanon in 1989, that was no longer true. They did not find past persecution. They were referring to the future. In other words, at the time he left in 1989, he may have had a well-founded fear if he remained. He could have experienced future harm. And in 1989, that could have been a basis for asylum, but when the war ended with the peace accords in 1990, a very brief time later, he no longer had a well-founded fear. And I'd like to also point out to the court that, you know, the basis of his claim for asylum is that he's a Christian from Lebanon. However, Lebanon has a population of 3 million people. One-third of them, or a million of them, are Christians. The president of Lebanon is a Christian. half of the seats in the parliament are reserved for Christians. So it just doesn't follow that he has a well-founded fear of future persecution.
Let me ask you, did any of the materials the board considered about conditions in Lebanon discuss threats to Christians from the Syrian army?
And that
was the group that originally detained him.
No, those materials that was, are you talking about the subsequent submission, the motion to reopen?
Mm-hmm.
Those articles, as we addressed in our brief, are not, they're about general civil strife. They're about predominantly about actions in southern Lebanon, where the Hezbollah forces are skirmishing with Israeli forces in southern Lebanon. But the average civilian Christian in Lebanon does not have a well-founded fear of Syrian forces. And the board is entitled to make its decision, and as long as substantial evidence supports that decision, this court cannot reverse that decision.
So the board didn't originally, I understand the board didn't consider those materials, but they didn't consider the threat to Christians from Syrians at the time.
I'm not sure I understand your question.
The board didn't look at it from the point of view of the fact that he was captured by the Syrian army.
Oh, I think they did, because the peace accords took into account the various factions. Syrian forces was one of those factions. The peace accords take that into account, and the Syrian forces have accepted the peace accords, whereby the president of Lebanon is a Christian and half of the members of parliament are a Christian. And so it's based on substantially changed country conditions. And additionally, the Department of State individualized analysis of this claim took that into account and found that the former Lebanese Christian forces were not were no longer at threat. Your Honor, I see my time is running low, and I did want to address two compelling issues as well. That is the jurisdiction on the motion to reconsider and the motion to reopen. Those are discretionary applications, and under 1252 B2-2, this court does not have jurisdiction to consider those appeal of those orders. Additionally, I would also take issue with counsel's characterization of the due process claim with regard to suspension and deportation. I think we put a considerable case citation in our brief, noting that there is no constitutional right to protected or liberty or property interest in suspension and deportation. I believe petitioners have mischaracterized the record by saying that the immigration judge terminated deportation proceedings. In fact, deportation proceedings had never been commenced. And when the Attorney General commences deportation proceedings is not subject to judicial review. And this court has considered that and found that it does not have jurisdiction to consider that issue in the Chapowski case. I'd also like to address the Blackman memo that he raised. First of all, he failed to exhaust his administrative remedies. That matter was not in the administrative record. He mischaracterizes the Blackman memo. The Blackman memo was merely guidance to the field offices as to how they consider allocating resources. It was not a directive. And in the memo clearly states that it does not create any entitlement at law for any remedy. And we believe that it's improperly being raised in this proceeding, and it mischaracterizes the authority. And at any rate, this court does not have jurisdiction to consider the purely prosecutorial discretionary determination as to when charging documents are filed.
Yes. Mr. Burke.
Thank you, Your Honors.
As to the termination of deportation proceedings, I would refer the court to the record at page 166, Judge Cuevas's order, where it says, it is hereby ordered that these deportation proceedings are terminated for failure to file the orders to show cause. And that's why I use that terminology. That was the terminology in Judge Cuevas's order.
Can you speak to the point that counsel made that, you know, you talk about this long delay, but there was no request on your client, by your client, to move this along?
to move the asylum application along, or? Your Honor, they had filed the application, and they were waiting for an interview. I don't know what else they could have done, having
represented. There's no procedure for them to request or to an inquiry that could be made?
There's no procedure of which I'm aware that they could mandate the INS to have adjudicated their asylum application any sooner. And they
the
were
INS doesn't take letters or anything asking, you know.
Whether they read them or not is another matter, or whether it has any impact or not. They were simply waiting for an interview, and they didn't get an interview. As to the reference to what happened to Mr. Dandan being a single incident, I would take issue with that. He was repeatedly beaten over 3 days, and his face was swollen. He was denied food for 3 days. But even if it was just a single incident, one beating, I believe in the Asani case, there was one beating, two teeth knocked out, and that was held to be past persecution. Your Honors, I would submit also as to the counsel's representation about page 199 of the board's decision, and page 198 of the record, I did not say the board found he had been persecuted. The board found he had been harmed, and that he had a well-founded fear of persecution at that time. Counsel also stated that they were not harmed by this delay. I would submit that they were. If the board agrees that they had a well-founded fear in 89, they should have been granted asylum in 1989, and this delay, therefore, was a harm to them. Also, if they had been granted asylum, they could have been citizens by now and not had to go through this whole agonizing process over all these years. So I'd submit that they had been harmed. I would submit that also the Blackman memo is relevant because it directs the asylum offices and the INS district offices to file these documents prior, these charging documents, prior to April 1st. There's no question that the OSCs were issued and served in December 1996. It's our position that they should have been served in the normal course of proceedings, which is right away to the immigration court. From the asylum office, several blocks away, to the immigration court, just 5 blocks from that office, and it wasn't done. And that was a due process deprivation because it deprived this family of a hearing on an application they filed in appropriate fashion in March 1997 of their chance for suspension of deportation. If there are no further questions, I thank you very much, Your Honor.
Thank you. Mr. Buchanan, the case will be taken under advisement.